Hi, Helene.
Hi, Serge.
So, as a focusing-oriented therapist, you've been practicing focusing for a long time. How did you get into it?
I got into it in about 1987 or so. I was in graduate school at the University of Denver in counseling psychology. And the funny thing is, I got into it not from anything I read in school, but my husband and I were taking a couples massage workshop, and I went out of the workshop and I saw the book Focusing on the bookstore shelf, and it just, I just riveted to that book. So it's really funny that I was doing something for pleasure and fun, which was also calling to me, and from that place found this book. And what was really interesting is being in graduate school, my passion was what brings about change in therapy. And as soon as I started reading this book, something in my body just said, this is it. This is it. And immediately it was talking about change and is very exciting. So started to focus right then.
Yeah. So what brings about change? And in a way, that sense of feeling guided by the body sense, and including how you first responded to the book.
Right, those stones, there's something so grounding about stones. In fact, to this day, I give clients a little stone sometimes for the, to really anchor the connection with me, or if they're going through something hard. And then we had stones as a topic at one of the FOT conferences recently. There's something about stones. I think they last so long. They're so grounding. And then just immediately reading about what causes change and that whole sense of implicit knowledge that's going on within us all the time and how to tap into that.
Yeah.
So different than the whole head thing of graduate school.
Yeah. But so that sense of change, that flow of change, so as that cover illustrates the flow of water on the stones and the tapping into this process.
Exactly. I can feel it right now. Yeah, and that really began a quest for me, and I, contacted Neil Friedman when I went back to the Boston area on vacation and considered doing my dissertation on focusing, which I didn't do. But then I studied with Ann Weiser Cornell in 1989. I actually got release time for my internship. And even there, I just felt like from my body that I knew she was a great teacher. I could sense that, and I wanted to learn from her. So it was, it just has been a following that flow. And it really was the best training that I had in all of my, that time of being in graduate school, is the best training to be a therapist. And I'm just so grateful, of course, for myself. It's been my major form of self-therapy all these years. Yeah.
And so actually, interestingly, the way you practice focusing, the way you use it, is certainly not therapy in the sense of pathologizing. There's something about acceptance and gentleness in it that's very important to you.
Very important, because if you put yourself in the shoes empathically of your client, it's an incredibly vulnerable thing to ask for help and to be in this unknown space with a stranger. And I so honor the courage of people coming, and have also found that so much that people walk in with is thinking something's wrong with them and thinking, they're messed up and they have to root something out of them. And I so much from the beginning just so believe in compassion, acceptance toward ourselves, and modeling that, and just really honoring what people coming, and what almost whatever I can honor, I honor, you know, in a session.
Yeah, yeah. So that sense of honoring, that sense of seeing that as people walk into your office, there is a vulnerability there and honoring it.
Exactly. And I really do believe in, from the very moment people call, being warm and welcoming, and helping them be warm and welcoming to whatever is going on within them. So it's like supporting that process, which is the focusing attitude of appreciating and listening to and honoring and being with whatever is going on with them. And I've had a special interest in bringing this to people who wouldn't be attracted to focusing, who wouldn't necessarily know about the mind-body connection, although, of course, now we're aided by the fact that it's become much more popular. But that wasn't so when I first started practicing in 25 years ago. In fact, cognitive behavioral therapy was, I think, very much in ascendance, and people really believing that they had to be positive about everything. And part of what I, you know, teach people is like when they would say, well, I shouldn't feel this way, or I, gosh, you know, it's so old that I still feel this way. And just the idea that, you know, when you do feel something and then you think you shouldn't, you're in this tug of war with yourself. It doesn't keep you from still suffering or feeling it. And now you've got this additional thing of thinking you're bad for even feeling it. So just different ways too of helping people be in the right relationship with what they're talking about and not feeling at all shamed for however it is, or, you know, it's like Jenlyn talking about, you know, we're already, whatever we're feeling or going through, we're already suffering. So to name it is such a relief because we're already living it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what you're talking about is being in the right relationship with what's happening.
Right.
So so that's that angle, that accepting, that empathy, that gentleness, that welcoming is fostering that sense.
Yes, exactly. And fortunately, I was fortunate to work with a supervisor who was very much taught me a lot about self-psychology and Kohut. And he, always felt a kindred spirit to focusing, because he talked about empathic immersion in what the client is experiencing rather than you interpreting it and you being the subject of it, is really getting in the shoes of the client and being what he called experience near. And actually, it's very much, you can think of it as being on the edge of their experience and maybe taking it one little step further, but not a huge jump, not saying everything you're thinking about them, but just this little, like, sensing where they are and reflecting that. And then, you know, maybe bringing it, or just kind of imagining it one, like, millisecond beyond. But he talked about that, like, staying very close to the client's experience and being really immersed in it.
Being very close to the client's experience and being at the edge of it. So just a tiny little step beyond, but not so far beyond that you're outside of it.
Exactly. Exactly. And by what you, reflect, you're helping clients, know how to relate to their inner experience. I have this, I had this little phrase that you can't start the car from down the road. You can only start from where you are. And that's another little trick of saying, you know, that the shortest distance between you and change is actually being where you are. So these kinds of things help people, you know, because mm-hmm. then they don't think, well, it just helps them because it really is hard. It really is. Takes courage to be where you are and to think that that will move you. Like, we know that. We've been focusing for a long time. We know that being exactly with what we're experiencing when we focus is so helpful, you know. But most people don't know that. There'd be no place for them to know it. They've always been told to get over it.
Yeah. So the shortest distance to change is being where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Being where you are, being feeling a lot of permission to share that and kind of, you know, I think it really also helps the whole trust, the whole rapport that you're totally welcoming and embracing everything that's brought and you're not judging, and that starts something and starts a way of modeling not judging inner experience. And to really, embody this ABCs, that the acknowledging, A is like acknowledging how you are and acknowledging how you are in the moment. And the whole paradox that as soon as you acknowledge it, it's already in a different form.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's hard to say, I don't feel good or I'm scared. And of course, people identify very much with what they're feeling. But if there's something you're acknowledging, you're also teaching that disidentification. You're teaching that they can witness and acknowledge something. And that also, that plus the idea of parts, like there's a part of me that feels this way. But even acknowledging something, it's already not all of you. It's something you're naming and acknowledging. So it does teach that sense of you can of a presence, as Anne Weiser Cornell would say, you know, the self in presence, that if you're there acknowledging something, you can have a relationship with it. It's not so threatening.
Yeah, you're not swallowed by it. You're not in it. You're not identified with it. But there is a part of you that's aware of it.
Right.
And so there is a relationship.
Exactly. And the word acknowledging is not too jargony. It's not focusing or closing your eyes. It's staying in contact. And a lot of times people will talk, and I don't really also shut down the story, because that's part of the relationship. And we are storied people, and women especially love to tell the story, and they want you to know them. But then if there is something, like, I might slow them down and say, let's really acknowledge that. And I use that word let, so they're not alone with it. And we're both there, and I'm standing with them acknowledging something
mm-hmm.
together. And also acknowledging strengths too.
Yeah.
You know, and then the being with is very much like the first steps of focusing, being with, let's just pull up our chair to that. Let's hang out with it. You know, let's kind of invite it over for a cup of tea and see what it might be wanting to share. And so it's already a little bit of focusing language without calling it that.
Mm-hmm.
And see the compassion of really having a compassionate presence and attitude toward it, that and I might really share with them that, you know, these things are there to share more with you. Like, I might say, you know, hey, you know, when your child wants to get your attention, they might talk louder and louder and louder, and you might want to tell them to shut up. But if you really listen, they usually calm down, or they want to tell you more because they have your attention. And so these inner places are like that. And, you know, these kinds of things just really help people feel more comfortable. And they usually nod their head if they have, you know, a child, or they've been with a child, because they know what I'm talking about. And
So even the words themselves are very relational, and the relationship that it fosters inside the person is that acknowledging, that being with it, and that compassion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And maybe even hearing more from it, hearing, you know, what it would like to tell us, if there's more of a story there. And then sometimes, if it feels right, you know, noticing if they touch their body or sensing it inside. Or, you know, and another thing is, for example, if they start to tell me about, gee, I'm always angry, or I have road rage, or I am always, whatever it is that I'm always, or this problem I have, I'll say, well, are you experiencing that right now? To bring it in present, in the present tense, because that's where we can work with things, especially in a more focusing-like way. Or let's say they experienced it in the past week, I might say, walk me through that. Tell me more how that was for you. Or let's, like, maybe giving me an example, walk me through it. And then they're re-experiencing it, and we can do that more experiential work, because to me, if you change really does involve having a different experience and being not externalizing, but without saying, gee, let's externalizing, is just these ways of helping walk people into it.
Yeah.
And get more present.
Yeah. So bringing it to the present moment experience.
Yeah, something that's in the room that's alive, that's got some juice, that has an edge, that feels, it already becomes more embodied. And usually it also brings that slowing down, because you need to feel like, how was that for you this week, or can you walk me through it? It does automatically create this pause and this sensing into something, rather than being in that sort of automatic pilot of saying it as if it more reflexively.
A slowing down, which, you know, happens naturally as you pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Right, and to also, as with the ABCs, learning to trust something that's within you, that it's, yes, they're coming to me for help, and yes, I don't say the answers are within, because that would be very ridiculous. But as they're being with something inside, it really does teach that there are answers inside without ever, again, without having to say that, because you're consulting with yourself. You know, you're, and learning to be a witness to everything you're bringing in, and me supporting them with that.
So it's an experiential learning of that quality of being a witness with what's in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it can be very joyful too. It can be this sense of aliveness, you know. I will say, good things are welcome here, you know. I think they can't bring that, and or sometimes if they are just bringing something that's very painful, they might even worry that that's all I see about them. I'm not always like this. So of course, this is one facet, one part, and I recognize that's what you want to bring to work on, but so you're so many faceted. You're so big, you know.
Yeah. So again, that part about the acceptance.
Mm-hmm. The acceptance, the welcoming everything.
The non-pathologizing.
Yeah, exactly. And if there's something that comes up again and again, and they're like, gee, I should be over this, I'm 50 years old, and that happened to me as a kid, and why am I still not over this, it'd be like, well, this is a core issue. So of course it keeps coming up again. There's something in this. It's maybe a big challenge for you in your life. And so of course it comes up again and again, and it comes up maybe in different facets that you've worked through some and there's these other. But again, well, that takes such vulnerability and strength and courage to be with these most core issues. We all have them. You know, we all have those things that come up again and again and still hurt. And so it's honoring that, and it's seeing the strength in that, which is they're willing to be with something that's so core. So, yeah, it's always something to validate there. And I really, you know, feel that with a stronger self and building a stronger self and that base, it's so much easier for people to work with things rather than coming, you know, from the critic, you know, to work from a stronger self, to work in relationship that they know I'm there and I'm standing with them looking at this, and also to help them then from that stronger self go to this edge of unknown, the part that is not yet known, and it's so creative and it's so on the edge and new and implicit.
Yeah. And of course it's that feeling of feeling safer, of feeling connected to one's strength, of you know, that's going to, and that relationship with the therapist and with the inner part, that's going to make it more possible to tolerate being on the edge and to stay with what's new.
Exactly. And you know, when people are come to me through reading the book, I know I'm in there somewhere, and I say, well, you know, you knew you were in there somewhere, and you knew that you wanted to know more, so you already were in touch with something, you know. And the idea, maybe I came up with this idea of inner voice because it seemed like something people could relate to, that they had this inner voice, this inner place that was calling to them or directing them, and something they could relate to. And of course, a lot of people think of inner voices as negative, and then we talk about that, you know, when it's more negative, it isn't really your inner voice. I call it, for the purpose of people who don't know focusing, I call it outside voices, like voices, things that are talking to you. They're saying you should, or you should this, or you should be over that, as opposed to the inner voice that's saying, I sense, I feel, I want, I know.
Right. So that inner voice is a voice that articulates an experience, and the other voice is a voice of a judgment from the outside.
Exactly. And that, what I kind of call that a gross sort. Like, later, you can get into more advanced critic work, like, is this something it's scared of? It's something it wants? Like, that part's been left out in the cold. But initially, when people are often very jumbled up and together, and they don't know what inside, what they're listening to, and often they're more listening to these outside judgmental voices than what's coming from them, and it helps them kind of know in the beginning of maybe what to pay attention to, what is that authentic present experience, and their, what's coming from inside of them versus that sort of outside chatter or judgment.
Yeah. So that possibility of then being able to notice the difference between the inner experience and the outside judgment that's been absorbed. Yeah.
Right, and even the outside judgment, there's a strength in that it usually comes from connection, from being, wanting to be, having a connection or an attachment or relationship with either someone really significant, a parent, teacher, friend that told you something that you absorb. So it came from relationship, and we are connecting human beings. So even there, it came from a desire to connect. And then it also comes from influence, you know, media, other things. But it still talks about just the idea that we're influenced is part of being a social being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we become aware of the many layers in which we're connected, and we let connections influence us.
Exactly. And some of those connections we want to keep, and some of those messages we want to keep. I always have this one that I, you know, my dad said, stay with the flow of traffic. You know, still in my mind, like, don't be the fastest one or this one. You know, it's like, you know, it's still in my, you know, it's a little silly one, but it just makes me feel connected with them. It's also kind of useful if I'm, you know, on the road. But, you know, we have a choice of, you know, some of these outside voices are really endearing. They're things we were taught that are very helpful. But if we identify it, we can choose, you know, some of the some ones that leave us victimized or judged, or, you know, we can be aware of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then make a choice. Is that how I feel? Wait a minute, you know, is that what, you know, I want to take that on.
Yeah, and that's how it relates again to the acceptance as the necessary condition for change. The accepting, the staying with it, and then it becomes possible to have choices.
Exactly.
So in your approach, then there's this very strong sense of engaging people in this process, whether they actually call it focusing or not. And often enough, when you deal with therapy clients, you don't talk about it as focusing per se, but you simply practice this.
Right, and it also keeps us engaged together, and they're coming for help from me, and I don't want to be that rejecting parent or put them out in the cold by themselves or make them close their eyes or make them... You know, I don't want to shut them out in any way. I want to bring them in. And, you know, usually we get kind of hurt in relationships. And so that's also part of that corrective, that reparative relationship. But it's connecting with them and also helping them connect to themselves and have this rich resource, you know, kind of the teaching the person a fish rather than giving them the fish. So they know and they can access this and feel more empowered. And it isn't like their inner self isn't this completely vast jungle of chaos.
Mm-hmm.
You can befriend it. It can make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So that connection, that making friends with what is inside.
Exactly. And trusting it, like trusting yourself, trusting what you know and feel, trusting those messages that you get, versus thinking that somebody else has the answer or somebody else, you know, this outside authority has the answer, is learning to trust yourself. And, you know, I do share that. Again, as you acknowledge the paradox of change, is as you acknowledge something, it does change form. So people will say, well, how do I get here? And, you know, but I'm not there yet. And it's like, what I say is like every time you listen inside, every time you can acknowledge it, you're already then a different, you're already a different person than making the next step. So if you can't imagine, of course, like, you know, process skipping, trying to go, well, I don't feel like I could ever do that now. I don't feel like I could ever get that job or that relationship or take that risk. But, you know, you're already different from the next step. So you can't try to think yourself into the future. It's trusting those steps, just you know, this phrase too, like a 10-degree change. It's, and you know, the tortoise won the race, and you know, things like, let's, because, yeah, like, when those kinds of judgments come up, like, I should be here, and how, this is so slow. And the other thing that we know from focusing, and that I teach, is that it's not a linear process. It isn't like, it always, yeah, doesn't it take more gas to start the car than keep it going? Well, yeah, so in the beginning, it just takes more gas, it takes more energy. And just like you learn to read and you're struggling with those ABC letters, but then all of a sudden it just took off. And that our inner process like that too. And it'll start calling us up on the phone. And it's so, I love it when somebody comes in and says, you know, what we were talking about, all of a sudden I realized I should call that person, or I should do this, I wanted to do this, or I stood up for myself. And it just came because they started connecting up with themselves.
Yeah. And so as I'm listening to you talk, I'm struck by the excitement and passion that goes about describing this process. And so I have a sense of you in a session, basically connecting with the excitement of going inside and of the pleasure of discovery and of which is in a way creating that atmosphere that's contagious for the client to find their own enthusiasm for this process.
Exactly. And how creative a process it is. And often people do connect with creativity as a positive. And when we are creating something new, or we're on this edge, or we're learning something new, it is so creative. And it is the excitement of learning as an adult. And it is exciting. Yeah, you're right. I do... I think have a passion for that, and hopefully it's contagious.
So this sounds like a nice place to end on this note, but I want to just check if you have anything else you might want to add.
No, I think that's a lot it, and I also do a lot of work with teaching therapists these kind of skills, and so excited we just are starting a focusing oriented therapy training program in the greater Washington area. We just had 12 people the other day interested. We have a new program co-sponsored by the Focusing Institute, and just so exciting to me that finally we would have a presence, a stronger presence in the Washington, Maryland, Virginia area. So we've never really had a cohesive focusing community, even though people have gone to workshops as Psychotherapy Networker, maybe taken a couple workshops with us, or my husband and I, Larry, who's we're coordinators in this area. But it's really exciting to me to actually begin to create that community and have other therapists learning this, you know, because it's, you know, nothing like it, right, Serge?
Yeah, I know. And it's very nice to share it. It's wonderful to share it. It's really a part of the pleasure.
Exactly.
This is part of the Focusing Conversations series of the Focusing Institute, hosted by Serge Prangle. All contents are protected by copyright. You can find other such conversations on our website at focusing.org/conversations.